The Blaze Radio Network. On demand. Freedom's Disciple on demand.
On the Blaze Radio Network.
Hello, America. Thank you so much for tuning in today. This, of course, is the show exclusive to The Blaze, where you come for the accent, but you stay for the principles. Today's going to be a very special show. Today's going to be a show that's going to be about principles and just breaking down an ideology. Today's a special show. I'm not going to talk about the news of the day. I'm not going to talk to you about what's going on in the world. There are plenty of people telling you that. But I wanted to acknowledge one of my mistakes right off the bat. So I'm a typical guy. You know, I'm not very I get forgetful about certain things. And, you know, you go through your everyday lives and you forget certain dates that are important. You forget anniversaries. And me being a jerk and a douchebag, I forgot it was Karl Marx's birthday a couple of weeks ago. Apparently, he would have been 200 years old. And I came across this not because I knew about his birthday and about being 200, but I came across it because people were talking about it. And I thought it was going to be important today to actually talk about Karl Marx. Actually have an honest conversation about Karl Marx, about his ideology, about his impact on the world. But also to talk about what he actually wanted and what he called for in his Communist Manifesto. And actually have a look at our society today and see. People say Karl Marx is wrong. People don't like Marxism. But let's see the influence of him on society today. And let's see if we can write that path. And then also I want to, at the end of the show, I want to share some history with you. Because a lot of people say, well, look, you know, I get what you say about Marxism, but it's never truly been tried. It's never been tried in America. That's not true. I'm going to talk to you about American history and about socialism, about what socialism and Marxism did in your country. But let me read from the article first, because the New York Times, you know that great paper, you know that prestigious paper who just has such great credibility, just has just awesome things to say. Well, they've always had this infatuation with communism. And like last year, there was, I think it was 2017, they put all these great articles about how, you know, Lenin, you know, the despot from Russia, Lenin was a hero environmentalist. They also then put out another article. I didn't read this because I just didn't care and I didn't want to know. But apparently, women have better sex lives under socialism. You know, there's a part of me that doesn't want to read, and there's the part of me that, you know, is curious and believes in facts and figures. I want to sort of see the research of how they prove this or what they said to get this opinion out there. But this opinion was written by Jason Barker, and it was titled, Happy Birthday, Karl Marx. You were right. And I want to read a couple of clips from the article from you, and then we're going to break down into Marxism and into Karl Marx's own words. So the article starts off in typical way that you would, you know, paint an ideologue like Marx. On May 5th, 1818, in the southern town of German town of Trier, in the picturesque wine-growing region of the Moselle Valley, Karl Marx was born. At the time, Trier was one-tenth the size it is today, with a population of around 12,000 people. According to one of Marx's recent biographers, Trier is one of those towns where, although everyone doesn't know everyone, many know a lot about many. Such provincial constraints were no match for Marx's boundless intellectual enthusiasm. What a way to open up an article about Karl Marx, huh? I wonder would they write the same picturesque above Donald Trump or George Bush? Doubt it, but Karl Marx, absolutely. You can read the article, but I'm just going to make some points through the article. As we reach, I'm reading from the article, as we reach the bicentenary of Marx's birthday, what lessons might we draw from his dangerous and delirious philosophical legacy? What precisely is Marx's lasting contribution? Today, the legacy would appear to be alive and well. Since the turn of the millennium, countless books have appeared, from scholarly works to popular biographies, broadly endorsing Marx's reading of capitalism and its enduring relevance to our neoliberal age. Marx had become the philosopher of the middle class. What did he mean? I believe he meant that educated liberal opinion is today more or less unanimous in agreements that Marx's basic thesis that capitalism is driven by a deeply divisive class struggle in which the ruling class minority appropriates the surplus labour of the working class majority as profit is correct. Even liberal economists such as Ribini agree that Marx's conviction that capitalism has an inbuilt tendency to destroy itself remains as present as ever. It later on continued, while most are in agreement about Marx's diagnosis of capitalism, opinion on how to treat its disorder is thoroughly divided. And this is where Marx's originality and profound importance as a philosopher lies. First, let us be clear. Marx arrives at no magical formula for exiting and the enormous social and economic contradictions that global capitalism entails. Because according to Oxfam, 82% of the global wealth generated in 2017 went to the world's richest 1%. What Marx did achieve, however, through his self-styled materialistic thought, were the critical weapons for undermining capitalist ideological claim to be the only game in town. So let's just talk about a couple of points here. First, there is a bit of an irony in that the popularity of Marx today is true solely to the benefit of capitalism. You know, there was a time in our world, you know, when Karl Marx was around, that books were considered, the reason you would buy books is, it's kind of like why you buy a Ferrari today. It was a statement piece in society. You know, if you drive a Ferrari now or a Lamborghini, or even to a lesser extent, if you have an iPad or a Apple computer, it's not that the Apple computer is better than everyone else's computer. It's really not. It's just a fashion statement. It's selling the world something about you, that you're cool, you're hip, you're trendy. Same with the Ferrari. You're making a statement to society. Hey, look at me. I have a Ferrari. I have a Lamborghini. Look at me, baby. Back when Karl Marx was around, books were kind of something similar because not everyone had them. You know, it's a modern day phenomenon, even in modern times, like in the last 5-10 years, that books have become so available. It's mainly due to sites like Amazon, true to technology. You know, books, I always say this, I'm in my mid-30s. When I was in school, the only way you could learn and do extracurricular activities was going to the library. And if you wanted to, let's say, to learn something about the moon landing, or you wanted to learn about Karl Marx, you'd have to go and like get a book, and then you'd have to like go to the back of the book where all the references were and look up Karl Marx or the moon landing or whatever it is, and go to the pages and read about it. And then you'd go to another book, and then, you know, have to go through the research. Now, literally, been vulgar, you sit on the toilet, you go on your iPhone or your phone, and Google stuff. You get books for free. I do this all the time. I go onto Amazon routinely once every 6-8 weeks, and I go onto Kindle books for free. And I've downloaded loads of books that I'll never read in entirety, but I've read different papers. I remember about 3 months ago, I downloaded all of Edmund Burke's writings for free. I'll never read all of Edmund Burke's work, but I wanted them for research for something I'm working on, and I got them all for free. That's true capitalism. That's true innovation. That's true free markets. That's true a profit motive. It's ironic that one of the things that has led to somewhat of a revival in Marx is capitalism. So there is, that's the first point. The second point is the philosopher of the middle class. How I got this show was by ringing Glenn as a fan one day and saying, you have to stop using this word, Glenn, please, and making a case why you should stop using the middle class. It's actually nice to see someone, even though it's a New York Times columnist, actually point out that the middle class is a Marxist term. It's why you should not use the term middle class. Because all it is it's just replacing the proletariat with middle class. The rich are the bourgeoisie, and the poor are the lumpen proletariat. They're Marxist terms. So it is actually nice to see that he is the philosopher of the middle class, which is true. But here's the thing we need to have a conversation about. Marx does arrive at a formula. It's a formula that is repeated through history. and it is take from the haves to give to the have-nots. This is my biggest frustration when I try and debate people about rich versus poor. You know, all this class warfare. You'll see all these stats about Oxfam. Oxfam, 82% of the global wealth generated in 2017 went to the world's richest 1%. What does that have to do with anything? I live a very poor life. I cannot find work for the life of me, full-time work. I haven't had a full-time job in nearly 7 years. My job is, I am a contract worker, and it's been even reduced more over the last couple of months, but I work about 4 or 5 days a month. I live off less than $500 a month. Everything else I do is on a voluntary basis. I can't find a way to add meaning to society that will pay me. I'm trying to find ways, but that is the ultimate situation I am in. I'm in a country where if you Google my name, all my work comes up that I have done for free. I cannot find a way to get out of the financial situation I am in. It sucks, but it is what it is. When I ask these people, I go, well, they're all about the richest 1% and all them having the wealth. I ask them, what have they done directly that has resulted in my situation? How has a business owner gone to make profit hurt me? The truth that hurts me, and here's the truth, there is no government program to help me get out of my financial situation. There's not one. What needs to happen is employers understanding that, you know, hiring me is not a risk, which it would be. Because if someone found out who I was, that I was working for them, there'd be war. Because you cannot dare have someone who's a free thinker, someone who actually believes in freedom, working for you. Now, if I was a Marxist, I'd have no problem getting a job. But the fact that people have made profit through innovation, through offering products and services to people, and people have taken them up on their offer of those products and services, and they have got rich from that, hasn't kept me down. Another way, this is in a lesser aspect of it, another way I can't find a job, because of the government. Because there's no innovation. There's no incentive to be innovative anymore. Because of the bailouts that we got. Because the government spent way out of its means when the times were good. And it has hurt the economy so much that there isn't that many jobs to apply for over here. And there hasn't been in a long time. There are some jobs, but there's not a lot of jobs. So the fact that 82% of the world's wealth generated goes to the richest 1% affects me in no way, shape, or form. All it does to highlight that is to say they have something you don't. That is all that is to do. I'll continue with the article. In the Communist Manifesto, Marx and Engels wrote, "The bourgeoisie has stripped of its halo every occupation hitherto honoured and looked upon with reverent awe. It has converted the physician, the lawyer, the priest, the poet, the man of science into its page wage labourers." The idea of a classless and stateless society would come to define both Marx and Engels' idea of communism, which is ironic. So if you actually believe what Marx says, because I'm going to point to his own words in a couple of minutes, but he said he wanted a classless society, which if you actually look at what the left, quote unquote, and Democrats and progressives in America today want, they don't actually want a classless society. They might say that, but they really don't by their actions. Their words and their actions mean two different things. And I just want to give you one example of this, and it's a controversial example. Look at how they talk about gender. Look at how they talk about gender. So if you are someone like me who believes in the tradition of there are two genders, because I actually believe in science, okay? There are two genders. There are male and there's female. There's an X chromosome and there's a Y chromosome. That's scientific. Unless the laws of science have changed since the last time I looked at it, that's the way it is, okay? However, to a liberal, to a progressive, they would go, that's John, that's hate speech. You know, it's people like you propagating that myth of there's only two genders that causes all the problems in society. And they'll accuse, we need a classless society. We need a labelless society. This is what we want. However, here's the problem. They always go and create new labels. Like, they would have some, if they wanted to believe in a classless society, here's what they would do. Look, I don't agree there's two genders. I'm not going to tell you there's 10 genders, there's 20 genders, there's 90 genders, because I actually believe in Marx's ideology of a classless society. I'm just going to say gender doesn't matter. You can feel whatever way you want, but we're not going to label anything. We believe in a classless society. Just let people be people. Just, there is no male, there is no female, and while I wouldn't agree with that, I'd at least respect their ideology for being consistent, of being classless. Of going, look, you are what you are. If you're a non-binary or a binary or a cisgender, whatever, all the 90-something or 100 genders there are now. At least that would be somewhat consistent. You're saying you want a classless society? Then that is a classless, that's a genderless society. There is no genders. It's, you can be what you want, you however you want, but there is no label to it. Because you cannot have a labelless society and a classless society and then go create new classes. I'll make a similar point about what Marx said in a couple of minutes. This transition, going back to the article, to a new society where relations among people, rather than capital relations, finally determine an individual's worth, is arguably proving to be quite a task. Do you know why it's proving to be quite a task? Again, this is another example of your words saying one thing and your deeds saying another thing. You want a society where relations among people rather than capital relations determine an individual's worth? Then stop talking about money all the time. Stop writing all these reports of, well, 82% of the money we made in 2017 was held by the 1%. All you're doing is basing people by their worth. You talk about people in the middle class. In Baltimore, used to be a part of the rich and the millionaires and billionaires if you earn more than $250,000. It's now $100,000. It's getting lower to get into the millionaire and elite class in Baltimore. Aren't you lucky up if you live there? But it's all about financial aspects of them. They're saying they want to base people on their relations and make an individual's worth based on that, not on their capital. I'm all for that. If you actually practice it, I actually believe in the words of Martin Luther King. Let's judge a man by the content of his character. That is a wonderful attribute, and I would welcome it on any grounds. Marx doesn't own that. Martin Luther King doesn't own that. It's just a general good idea. I don't look at someone and kind of go, well, how much do you earn? Oh, you earn $100,000. I'm going to talk and treat you a certain way. And then look at someone else going, oh, you only earn $1,000 a month? Oh, you're a bum. I'm not going to talk to you. I'm going to talk down to you. I earn more than you. I don't treat people like that. However, the left and the Democrats and some Republicans now base everything around materialistic wealth and capital relations, and that defines their relationships. They're playing out Marx's what he wanted. I could finish off the article because this is the conclusion. Marx, as I have said, does not offer a one-size-fits-all formula for enacting social change, but he does offer a powerful intellectual acid test for that change. On that basis, we are destined to keep citing and testing his ideas until the kind of society that he struggled to bring about and that increasing numbers of us desire is finally realized. So what type of society did Karl Marx seek to bring about? When we come back, I'm going to read Karl Marx's own words to you. And then we can have an honest conversation about what he wanted and have an honest conversation about, well, which party in America, or is it both parties, that are actually following the Communist Manifesto? Because you might be surprised, it's not just the left following the Communist Manifesto.
Freedom's Disciple with Jonathan Dunn on demand.
The Blaze Radio Network.
We'll be right back.